order this meeting of the State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee on Wednesday, March 10th. First item on the agenda is approval of the minutes. I'd ask members to review the minutes for a second. We wait for people to sit down back there. See anything, Senator Betzel?
I'll move the minutes, Madam Chair.
Senator Betzel moves that the minutes of the March 8th hearing on committee be approved. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The first bill on our agenda, and we're going to be hearing 5 bills that deal with proposals which are turn out are not the same, but they have a number of the same goals, and that is to promote innovation and cooperation and collaboration among state government, local governments, and the private community. Private business community, private foundation community, et cetera. Some of them are councils. Some of them are called coalitions. One of them is actually creating a new legislative commission. And some of them are long-term. Some of them are short-term. And Senator Bonhoff is bringing us a bill that establishes a commission that's charged with coming up with some strategic planning. Senator Bonhoff, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm here to present CSI, the Commission on Service Innovation, Senate File Number 2620. Last session, I worked to bring forward a proposal for school districts to share business services. In doing that, I faced a tremendous amount of resistance from all sectors, really. And what I learned from that is that while I have the same goal, and that goal is that in order for us to have a government that is reflective of the 21st century opportunities and takes advantages of what we have available to us, we do, in fact, have to take a step back and redesign the way we do business across all sectors. So while I was using the school districts last session as a laboratory, so to speak, about how we might approach redesign, that it really goes way beyond school districts. That, in fact, for us to effectively look at how government ought to be structured to take advantage of, in many ways, what technology can provide us, we have to be willing to step outside of our everyday roles and do some strategic planning. We have to be very clear about what it is we're looking to accomplish. And frankly, I don't think that we can get that done within the legislative process. I, over the interim and the summer, spoke to many thought leaders in this area. I will remember a meeting I had with Vice President at Target Corporation, Nate Garvis, who is a very creative individual. And it was in that meeting that we came up with the name CSI, so I credit him for that. He's a marketing guy also, and so it always helps to have a name that people recognize and appreciate. But it's not just about reconfiguring the same people or the same things, but in fact looking at service innovation. What is it going to take to take a significant transformational leap forward? So the bill before you today creates a commission with no legislators, in fact. It says that we ought to bring thought leaders together across many sectors. We ought to include the best and the brightest in various parts of our delivery system. So I've set forward a commission that consists of 15 members. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I should first introduce the A1 amendment because I've actually made a change to my membership, and that's reflected in the A1 amendment. While we're passing that out, I will just read the establishment section of Subdivision 1. It says, the Commission on Service Innovation is established to provide the legislature with a strategic plan to reengineer the delivery of state and local government services, including the realignment of service delivery by region and proximity, the use of new technologies, shared facilities, and other means of improving efficiency. So that is the general purpose. Well, I don't believe in putting a purpose statement in the bill that gives some direction of where we're going, and there are outcomes listed later in the bill. In A1, are we ready to move the amendment?
Yes. Senator Betzel moves the A1 amendment. This is an author's amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair, I've substituted the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees instead of Education Minnesota, not because I didn't want the Council of Education Minnesota, but we're really talking about a broader group in this case. And so in terms of balance and what MAPE has done some significant work in this area, so they, I thought, would be a good member to join this commission. So I have three members basically from the business community, one from the Chamber of Commerce, one from the Minnesota Business Partnership, one from the High Tech Association. We have the foundations, the McKnight, Wilder, and Bush. And I will say that since then, the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits has come forward and expressed interest to be part of this. And so I would encourage the foundations to talk to the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, and perhaps they could work out among themselves who are the most appropriate members to sit on this commission. We have one representative of the Association of Minnesota Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, the University of Minnesota, MNSCU, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, a representative of AFSCME, a representative of SEIU, representative, as I said, of the High Tech Association, and then the state Chief Information Officer. That is the only person from state government that I have included in this commission, and I will let the state chief information officer speak in just a moment, but I think that's telling, because I think that this effort ought to be driven by a commitment to have technology be the engine of our reform and reengineering efforts. That Mr. Gopal Khanna, in his role, is a visionary and does have a very far and wide view of where we need to go as a state. And so I thought that it would be appropriate not only for him to be included in the task force, but actually to convene the first meeting. This commission is required to raise outside funds should they need it, to use their outside funds for the staffing. The commission is required to seek public input, and we actually have included social network language in the bill, because I think it's time to let the public weigh in on these discussions. There is many talented and creative people out there who would like to have a hand in designing our future in terms of what our state government should look like as we look to delivering the best possible services in our future. Very discreet set of time period. It starts immediately after session. We want this strategic plan process to be complete by January 15th. The strategic plan should also include a process for government to report on its own work on a regular basis. So there, rather than go through line by line, I'd like to take this time of my testimony to let the people who are going to be part of the commission, several of them are, their organizations are represented here to testify, and they will just briefly speak to their interest in serving on the commission and their vision for what this work can create.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. We will take very, very brief testimony because we have a very long agenda that has to be completed by 5 o'clock. And then we have some, I'm sure, discussion and questions from members for you. But you may bring forward whoever you like.
Thank you. And I'll just start with Mr. Khanna. And if you could come to the table, and also at the same time, Tom Hesse and Jill maybe join me. So in the interest of time.
Where would they?
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Gopal Gopal Khanna. I'm the CIO for the state of Minnesota. I also represent the Office of Enterprise Technology, which is the state's lead agency for policy as well as providing services to executive branch of government and other units of government as well. I'm here to provide some thoughts on Senate File 2620. Madam Chair, when Senator Bonaf asked me to talk about CSI, I thought I was auditioning for the show CSI. Then she changed the rules on me, and she says, brightest and the best. For the record, I want you to know, Madam Chair and members, that I flunked seventh grade. And so,
we're still honored to have you here, Madam Chair.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate that very much. I'll come to the point. Madam Chair, members, technology, innovation, and improving government services has been my passion. These are my passions and have been for the longest time. And I've had the great honor and privilege as the state CIO to work with some of the finest people, both in government, public sector, and private sector, who really want to make our government better, more effective, more citizen-centric. There's no question in our minds that with the changes that are taking place as we are moving our country and our economy from brick-and-mortar state of the last century into the digital era, we need to position our government to operate efficiently and effectively. So any work that pertains to innovation, and especially pertaining to improving services, is welcome. So I really see the establishment of this Commission on Service Innovation as another step to improving government in these harsh economic times. And I laud Senator Bonaf for her leadership as well as her efforts to further innovation in government. It's a worthy cause. I support the goals of the bill, and would be glad to be a member of the commission, and I feel honored that I'm being asked to convene the first meeting, which I'll be delighted to do. I should, however, note that I will not be able to commit any resources from OET to either staff or support the workings of the commission. We are rather working under very difficult financial position within our own budget. So, having said that, you certainly have my goodwill and support for this wonderful effort.
Thank you, Mr. Khanna. Mr. Hesse.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And let me just say that we also support the legislation and are happy to suggest members or a member to it. Many businesses throughout the state have experience on redesigning their own activities, and I think they could certainly be of use to a commission like this. So we'd be happy to participate and help out in this commission. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Larson, did you want to speak? Briefly, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jill Larson with Minnesota Business Partnership. We also support the bill. Some of our members are already doing some of this best practice work with state agencies. And so we look forward to appointing someone to the commission that can maybe help take those best practices and spread them to a wider audience. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Manisich.
Madam Chair, fellow committee members, Paul Matesik, Executive Director of Wilder Research, which is part of the Wilder Foundation. I'd like to say that we would be very eager, willing, and excited to participate in this commission. It seems that it's a creative way to respond to some of the economic challenges that we have right now, where we know we have to be more productive, we know we have to provide services better, and yet there won't be resources, in fact, maybe declining resources for doing so. So we see this as a very creative opportunity. We look forward to working with the other foundations and bringing that perspective into to these deliberations. And we think that this really will enable the state to look at outcomes, to think about how we can organize services, not to support institutions or to do business as usual, but really to ask, well, what's going to make roads better, lakes better, student achievement better, what's going to provide care for the elderly now and into the future, in a creative and a productive way. And we like the words leveraging technology. We like the fact that it's going to mesh public input with some creative expert minds. And again, we look very forward to participating in this commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Matesik. Mr. Lindstrom?
And then Mr. Kajewski could also join us.
Not even close in the pronunciation. No.
Get
Mr. Lindstrom.
I was right?
Yeah.
I was right.
Good afternoon. Peter Lindstrom. I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs for the Minnesota High Tech Association. And as you can imagine, we like the idea of leveraging technology as well. I'm wearing two hats this afternoon. I'm the VP at the Minnesota High Tech Association, but also I'm the mayor of the city of Falcon Heights, which is really the model for shared services, we believe, in the state of Minnesota. Senator Pappas, we share services with the city of St. Paul. St. Paul provides our ambulance service. We also tap into the purchasing power of the city of St. Paul for buying things like gasoline, mm-hmm. very expensive for a city like ours. Senator Marty is on this committee as well. We utilize the city of Roseville for providing all of our information technology and telecommunications and engineering services. 20 different examples of shared services that a small city of like ours, 5,000 people, a small budget, we have to do it. And I think a commission like this can be a great chance for sharing best practices. And technology has got to be a key part of that. Let me just provide one quick story. A great tool these days for connecting with constituents, connecting with citizens, is this thing right here. Not just the phone part of your smartphone, but the application. There's a new app that we've just started using in Falcon Heights. It's a startup company called C-Click Fix. If I'm driving down the road in my city and I see a pothole, I can use this to take a
you
picture.
You stop your car,
I
pull over to the side, take out your smartphone.
Stop my car. I hop out of my car, and I can take a picture of that pothole. It will automatically send that photograph along with the GPS coordinates to our city administrator like that.
Wow.
It opens up a file on this application so that anybody who has indicated they're interested in the city of Falcon Heights can know that on such and such date, the city was notified that there is a monster pothole on Main Street. Okay, and then they know that that file has been open for a week or 2 weeks or a month. And then it goes both ways. So the government can say, we've taken care of that problem. But it brings more transparency to government. It costs zero to do this.
Great.
So I think there's best practices like that we can share around the table. Thank you very much.
You're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'll be real quick. I'm Richard Kajewski, Legislative Affairs Director. Pardon me?
She was right. I was
she was right.
Her name wrong. Right.
Her assistant checked right. before the hearing, though. I'm Richard Kajewski, Legislative Affairs Director for the Minnesota Association of Professional Employees. To make it real brief, we'd like to thank Senator Bonhoff for her leadership in attempting to streamline government through the establishment of the Commission on Service Innovation in Senate File 2620. Among the MAIT membership is a large majority of the state's and MNSCU's IT professionals. Our employees have and will continue to embrace any opportunity to evaluate how technology can be leveraged to reduce costs and enhance quality while we still maintain and provide the citizens of Minnesota the essential services that they can and should be proud of today. This bill does allow us the opportunity to be part of that solution, and we welcome that opportunity. We look forward to working with the legislature and the other stakeholders in this group to make sure that these government agencies provide the highest quality services to the citizens of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you very much. That concludes the testimony.
Yes.
Now discussion on the bill. Senator Bonhoff, although we generally frown on in this committee on purpose language, it seems to me that your subdivision one actually is describing the duties of the group rather than a philosophical purpose. So I don't see any problems with that. On on page two, I just would like to suggest some shorter language for you, Mr. Bodern, line 225. Senator Bonhoeffer, do you see where I'm looking?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we have to advise them. I think we can just say what they may do or may not do. And so I would hope we could move, Senator Lurie would help me by moving to strike, shall give strong, and then on 226, consideration to the retention, and insert may retain.
Okay. Madam Chair, that's fine with me.
And Senator Lurie moves that amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And then, Senator Bonhoeff, on your reporting, you direct the commission to publish monthly reports, and you say to whom to report. I'm not quite sure where they're going to be reporting.
Madam Chair.
They shall publish monthly reports where?
Madam Chair, I envision that they would have a website on the or a web presence on the Minnesota Senate website, and I've also talked to some that the chamber also has a website, and that could also be an additional place where reports could be. The intent is to make sure the public has access to what happens during the meetings.
I think maybe you need to say kind of like where, like shall publish electronically, because if they start doing paper reports, you're going to get some fiscal impact there. So electronic reports perhaps are not so expensive. So maybe insert, at least at this point, electronic monthly reports.
Madam Chair, that'd be fine.
Senator Lurie moves the insertion of that after publish on line 2.28. And it's not required in any of these commissions, but if you're really looking to make it accessible to the public, you may want to consider making it follow the open meeting law.
Madam Chair, I would like to I agree. I would like them to follow the open meeting law. I intend to be sitting in those meetings and listening.
I'm sorry. I didn't have a chance to visit with you about these. They're not unfriendly amendments, as you know. But Mr. Bodden, I don't know what the reference is.
Madam Chair, I think it's Chapter 14C, but I'm going to double-check that for you and have an amendment ready in a moment to make
okay.
it conform.
Okay. While Mr. Bodden is doing that, is there discussion about the bill or questions about the bill? Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I did speak with Senator Bonhoeff a little earlier, too, and I think that one of the things AFSCME is actually represented by two major councils that are organized differently, Council 5 and Council 65. And if we could give each of them membership on this commission, I think it would serve it better. And I am very supportive of the bill, and I think that Senator Bonhoeff indicated that she'd be willing to accept something like that. And
do we have an amendment?
Mr. Bodern was going to work on and how to structure that properly.
Mr. Bodern.
Madam Chair, on page 1, line 11, delete 15 and insert 16. And then on page 1, line 23, delete one representative and insert two representatives. And on page 1, line 24, after employees, insert comma, including one from Council 5 and one from Council 65.
Do we understand Senator Lurie's amendment? Discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Do you have the open meeting reference? I'm still waiting. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, just a quick question for Senator Bonhoeff on, in terms of the Bush Foundation,
How have you talked to them about being on this council? Because it seems to me they put a lot of their money into one big project.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I have talked to them, and they have not committed. They were interested to see how this went, and so it was actually my thinking that if they choose not to be on this council, the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, I could easily substitute them, and that was my thinking in that area.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling, thank you.
Senator Bonoff, would you consider the Association of Minnesota Townships at all when we're talking about state and local government services? I don't know if they would want to or be interested in it, but there's an awful lot of townships around the state.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, I would be open to that. You know, when I heard about Senator Lurie's request, I was thinking, oh, can't they just share a spot? You know, it's just that it gets so unwieldy when you get too many members. But I think it is important, if we're really going to get something done, that everybody have a seat at the table. And I agree that perhaps townships' interests are slightly different than counties and cities. So their interests might be different. And, in fact, some of the best economies of scale might come from their participation, so I think that's probably good to include. And I'm also, you know, aware not everybody comes to every meeting, and so.
Madam Chair, could we,
Senator Roebling,
add a number 16 then, mm-hmm. and just add?
Well, it would be now. It would be putting it at 17.
17. Okay.
On line 111, and we can just put them at the end at this point. And number 16.
I'm sure.
Mr. Bodern?
You might want to consider adding them after clause 7,
okay.
Simply to, these are kind of grouped by the various interests they represent.
Okay. So after clause 7, insert one representative from the Minnesota Association of Townships. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Mr. Bonner, do you have my open meeting?
Madam Chair, for the open meeting requirement, I think on page 2, line 16, after the period, you can insert, meetings of the commission are subject to Minnesota statutes, chapter 13D, and that will take care of the open
Senator
meeting
Senator Lurie moves that amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any further discussion? Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, under subdivision 3, organization C, where the commission may solicit and receive private contributions, it goes down the last sentence, the commission may hire staff to assist commission in its work. If they did, would that staff position be paid for through the private contributions and no public money? Is that how that?
Okay. Yes,
no,
Madam Chair,
money.
Senator Perry, that is how.
And that's not unheard of either, by the way. I mean, that there are groups that are quasi, government sponsored, or at least in legislation like this, that operate with private dollars. Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, one other question then. The money that is received, is that controlled then just within this commission, or where does that money go, and how is it accounted for?
That's a very good question, and I think we're going to have to leave that to the Finance Committee when the bill gets to the Finance Committee. All of these bills, by the way, are going to the Rules Committee first, and the reason why that's a very good question, and Senator Bonoff and others who have these bills too, is because we did have some difficulty in the Sesquicentennial Commission of determining, as we were soliciting, and that's one of the groups I was talking about, soliciting sponsorships from the business community, from citizens, and whatever, of having an appropriate fiscal agent to both receive the dollars and to be held accountable for spending them. So, Senator Bonoff, you should work with the finance staff, committee staff, to Mr. Mosman, to make sure that you have a fiscal agent, and it may well be the office of Mr. Ghana's office, but you need a fiscal agent. Is there further discussion on Senate File 2620? Seeing none, Senator Lori moves that Senate File 2620 be recommended, as amended, be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Rules. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Senator Rummel. And we're going to hear, we're hearing all these bills together, but we're going to hear Senator Metzen's bill before we hear the two I have. Senator Rummel brings us Senate File 2496, which is a new legislative commission.
Madam Chair, I have an author's amendment, the A4 amendment.
Okay.
And it makes a significant change in the original bill. And I will also need to make an oral amendment to that author's amendment.
This is an author's amendment. Senator Perry moves adoption of the A4 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted.
And, Madam Chair, can I make an oral amendment to that?
I'm sorry. Yes, we'll take it separately, but go ahead. Where is
On line 1.19, after the words, the director of, insert, the Center of Politics and Governance at.
Okay, this is also an author's amendment. Senator Perry moves adoption of the oral amendment as going to be repeated by Senator Rummel for Mr. Bodern.
Madam Chair, the only thing I would suggest is you pick it up on line 24 as well.
Thank you, Mr. Bodern.
And on line 24, same phrase. All in favor of the Perry motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails, and the amendment to the delete all is before us, is approved. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This bill is a change from where I started a couple of years ago. I've been working on this idea for some time. What it does is establish a simple workforce on policy and research, and I'm affectionately calling it the Smart Government Bill.
Okay.
I mean, after Senator Bonoff.
Everybody needs an acronym.
You need
or
to have something.
Right?
So mine is the Smart Government Bill for, and all of us can smile. The purpose of the bill. The bill takes the first step in creating a sustainable relationship between policymakers in the Minnesota legislature, that's us, and our research community. As was illustrated so well at our One Minnesota Day, there is widespread agreement that policy based on rigorous, independent research has a better chance of serving the public well than policy that lacks that foundation. When it comes to setting priorities for the state and acting on those priorities through long-range or strategic planning, solid grounding in research is absolutely essential. There are a number of models across the country that connect their legislatures with their research communities. In Minnesota, we have two smaller organizations that do that, the Office of Legislative Auditor and the LCCMR. This workforce would help us describe a more permanent relationship with our research community for our large policy forward-looking initiatives. The bill charges a small group of policy leaders and leaders from the research community to work together to create a roadmap that will lead us to the implementation of a policy that formally links policymakers with our research community. The task force will propose a model for generating legislative priorities, describe the structure and operations of the research side of that relationship. We'll also outline the steps that need to be taken in order to implement what I'm calling the Smart Government Bill. And in addition, it will explore the various costs and benefits of linking policymakers to the research community. They will also look at funding structures. The bill calls for a report at the beginning of the 2011 session.
Why is this bill important? First, by establishing a mechanism that facilitates legislative access to research in a timely way, we will change the way we do business. And in so doing, we will also increase the capacity for change. We've all heard Tom Gillespie point out over and over again that we are moving into a new economy, one that requires that we become more nimble and flexible, but most importantly, more productive. Having ready access to independent, nonpartisan, rigorous research and data is a necessary foundation for informed decision-making. It is why I'm calling this the Smart Government Bill. More important than asking if we are getting bigger or smaller, we need to ask ourselves, are we getting smarter? The facts and data we obtain through a closer relationship with our research community will go a long way in helping us identify our long-range priorities in the best interest of the state. One criteria in this working relationship would be to secure timely response to the legislative inquiries. Our own legislative inquiries will focus the research and give it relevance. So this is a partnership. We as policymakers ourselves, it's our job to initiate policy, and by forwarding our research priorities, we give the commission, whatever comes out of this workforce, relevance. We will focus their work. The second reason why this is important is that when the legislature establishes a close relationship with researchers, we also change the landscape in the communities. In other words, we are going to have stronger civic and community support for our work. The university and other research institutions have invested in Minnesota's knowledge base. Accessing that knowledge base on behalf of public policy is a productive use of their efforts and increases the benefit of their investment. In addition, the independence of the research provides authority and credibility to the data that legislators will use. As the work of the Office of Legislative Auditor has illustrated, independence from the legislator and partisan politics or special interests is central to the success of Mr. Noble's work. It will be central to our work, too. When policymakers use research in their decision-making, they also give the public a glimpse into the often hidden work of research done by our research communities. Public understanding of the knowledge that informs our decisions should also strengthen public support for policy changes and innovations that come along. Finally, and most importantly, using research to inform our decisions changes the odds for policy improvements and therefore is more likely to improve the outcomes for all Minnesotans. Understanding what programs and strategies hold the most promise will help us legislators move more quickly and take advantage of the opportunities on the horizon. At the same time, it will help us avoid costly mistakes. Using research as the foundation of our decision-making will help us avoid policy gaps and shift us from a piecemeal approach to a more strategic and coherent policy-making strategy. Again, colleagues, Senate File 2496, the Smart Government Bill, is just a first step to a larger vision of closing the gap between policymakers and our research community. Closing this gap needs to be part and parcel of any good governance initiative. As Darwin observed, it's not the strongest of the species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but those who are most responsive to change. If we are going to succeed in the new economy, we need the tools to understand and adapt to the changes that lie ahead. I urge you to pass this bill so that we may take the first step in that direction. And, Madam Chair, I have with me Dane Smith from Growth and Justice. And is it Doctor? Dr. Judy Temple from the Humphrey Institute.
Thank you, Senator Rumble. We have two additional minor changes. Mr. Bonner.
Madam Chair, when I prepared the amendment, I didn't do my math very well. On page 1, line 5, 12 should be 14.
14.
And on page 1, line 27, there's another reference to the director of the Humphrey Institute, and that should be amended to read the Center of Politics and Research at the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
At the Humphrey Institute. Right. I mean, do they have to have that board thing?
Center of Politics and Governance.
Governance, excuse me.
We'll get the title right. It seems it needs to be in there three different places.
I'd like to move the amendment.
Senator Betzel moves the oral amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Mr. Smith.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dane Smith, President of Growth and Justice. We're a policy research organization that's really dedicated to renewing Minnesota's good government tradition. I want to thank you for affording this opportunity to make this case for bringing more innovation, more collaboration, more evidence-based rigor to the business of governing and service delivery and all the vital things our governments do. Our underlying philosophy is this. We think that the smartest possible public investments based on the best evidence for effectiveness and ROI, a magic acronym meaning return on investment, are good for our human capital, good for our people, and good for the everyday quality of our lives, and good for business in the long run. We've been working with Senator Rummel and many others in the community, in the Minnesota community, in the House, generating momentum towards constructive, comprehensive redesign of our big system cost drivers and state and local government so that we do get better results for the dollars spent. And I'm sure that the members of the committee are aware that there's a growing movement and agitation on a broad front for innovation and redesign. And we are part of a network that includes businesses, foundations, groups ranging from the Taxpayers Association to the Citizens League and ourselves. We're pushing on this front for exactly the kinds of initiatives that the committee is considering today. And while I'm here to lend support to Senate File 2496 and been working with Senator Rummel on this Workforce for Policy, Innovation, and Research, we think all of the bills, the innovation bills being considered by this committee today, have merit. SF 2620, Senator Bonhoff's proposal for the CSI, brings together this collection of foundation, business, academic, and public employee expertise. And this independent funding source makes sense in that proposal. SF 2511 and SF 2516, Senator Rest, your proposals for a collaborative governance council and or a Minnesota Coalition for Innovation and Collaboration are also fresh concepts that would establish creative new partnerships. And this idea in SF 2516 of innovation challenge grants is a refreshing carrot among all the sticks that are being used these days to drive efficiencies. And finally, SF 1880, Senator Metzen's proposal to establish and reinvigorate the Board of Innovation also deserves consideration. But we're here to praise Senator Rummel's bill specifically because we think it takes this ideal first step toward establishing a relationship between the research community and policymakers. And without this research base and this entity, this foundation, a trusted resource for research and evidence, it's hard to imagine the innovation really getting traction. We would hope that what develops out of this is something like the Washington State Institute for Public Policy. In our own Governing with Accountability report about a year ago, we kind of surveyed the national field, and the Washington State model kept coming up. Policymakers and efficiency experts, public strategy group, other groups in Minnesota kept returning to the Washington State model as the example of an entity that has credibility and years of existence now in Washington that is looked to and is actually provides cover for legislators to do the right thing because they are so respected in providing evidence. So I'd really encourage you to take a look at that Washington State model, and we hope that this workforce leads us down that direction. So we think that Senator Rummel's proposal could lead to a really muscular, forward-looking research institute with something like the credibility and prestige that the legislative auditor has, only proactive and looking forward, coming up with new ideas and policy innovation and research and restoring Minnesota's rightful place as a real leader on the frontier of good government innovation. I want to say one quick thing. The notion that we can redesign or innovate our way out of our historically huge structural deficit is probably an illusion. There is lots of evidence, speaking of evidence, that our unprecedented tax cuts and downsizing of the public sector have made us worse off than we were 10 years ago. We think we need more revenue to replace this historic downsizing, and we need to make sure that we raise taxes in a way that produces a less regressive system. But if we achieve savings from innovation and redesign of just 1 or 2 percentage points from a biennial budget of some $30 billion, that's $300 million to $600 million more for a Commonwealth, and any investment towards that goal certainly makes sense. So that's all I have. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Dr. Temple?
I'm Judy Temple. I'm an associate professor at the Humphrey Institute, and I'm here to speak with enthusiastic support of Senator Rummel's important first step in creating this connection between the legislature and researchers at the university. I'm a member of the research community that would be involved in this endeavor. I'm interested in cost-benefit analysis and policy evaluation. And I was also asked to speak on behalf of Professor Larry Jacobs. Professor Larry Jacobs at the Humphrey Institute is the person referenced in this amendment, the director of the Center of Politics and Governance, who is willing and eager to host and be the chair and the convener of the first meeting of this task force. He was unable to be here today. Those of you who remember your first semester of economics, remember the central economic issue was how to allocate scarce resources in an efficient manner. And it's increasingly important that we make efficient decisions. There's a growing body of knowledge out there called the What Works movement, or the What Works registry. We know there's been a lot of different policies and programs that have been evaluated rigorously, and there's an accumulating body of knowledge about what our effective practice is. And we'd like to bring together researchers and the legislature to help improve decision-making and public policy-making in the state of Minnesota. The role of the Humphrey Institute, we believe, would be to help promote nonpartisan research. The research would be legislative-driven, so the inquiry, the type of research questions would be chosen by the legislature, and the research would be intended to serve the legislature. So we're interested in doing rigorous research, nonpartisan, that serves the legislature, and we're very supportive of this endeavor.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Senator Rummel? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we have been working with folks from the U of M. In fact, they did a seminar for us a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, it was during a time when we ended up having floor sessions and committee meetings, and I think only 12 legislators attended. But I was there for one of the days, and it was very informative. It was Karen Kadick and Sarah Benning. And they were focusing on family impact issues and trying to link research with the development of public policy. And they are pursuing that and actually have a board of legislative advisors, and we've met several times with them to give them topics that we think would be relevant to the legislature. Is that something that that must be what you're talking about, but on a wider spectrum, since theirs mainly deal with family impact issues?
Exactly. So strengthening and expanding these connections between the legislature and the research base. And when I mentioned the Humphrey Institute, certainly at the University of Minnesota, there are very many knowledgeable people who could interact and represent the research community, and particularly in the College of Education, like Karen Cadigan.
Madam Chair and Senator Roebling, the vision of this particular task force is to you're absolutely right. There are so many places in the research community, whether it's Wilder Foundation. I've talked to folks from the Wilder Foundation. I've talked to the Bush Fund. There's a wealth of information out there, but there's no easy access for us to get to the information at a time when we need it. Sometimes we don't have a whole lot of advanced time. But in particular, what we're hoping this will do is look at those big strategic priority questions that need to, we need some guidance on. So whatever group, whether it's Senator Bonnoff's group or something that comes out of Senator Metzen's bill, whatever groups come up and help us establish priorities, we can take those priorities and farm them out to this research consortium, whatever it becomes, because it's not shaped yet, and ask them to give us in a timely manner the best information that's out there right now on what are the best practices, what are the ones that are most likely to give us a return on our investment. When we were at the One Minnesota event, I believe they gave us an illustration of some judiciary types of changes that were made. The research was done, and they saw, well, there's maybe 12 things that will help intervene for juvenile crime or whatever. But of those 12, three of them give us the best return for the dollar. There might be one that gives us greater return but is too expensive for us. But these three, this portfolio of three, will accomplish the same thing with less money. So we're trying to marry the best practices with the return on investment. On the big scale questions that our long-range people are charged with, our long-range planning need to have information for. So that's what this is for. That doesn't mean that the other wonderful things, that whether it's the university or Humphrey Institute or Wilder, the other information that they have available is under the table. Absolutely not. This is more on that big 5,000-foot level thinking that we need for moving forward. It's mostly directed at moving forward. There are, it was, again, at the Humphrey Institute, they brought this up. I found it in my research. People who are in the research community can see the patterns emerging on the horizon. But by the time that information distills down to us, we may have missed the opportunity to capitalize on that pattern. I think some of the things in Senator Bonnoff's bill is another way of getting a look at what's coming down the pike that right now is not in ordinary parlance. All we're trying to do is make sure that we jumpstart instead of always looking in the rearview mirror and fixing.
Senator Pappas. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Rummel, I'm very interested in this proposal that you have, and I've been a longtime believer in evidence-based decision-making. It's just sometimes you can't get the evidence. So I think this is perfect. I also like the idea that you're looking a little bit like the state auditor model in that we have input into what we think would be very timely research topics. And I do know that a number of years ago, it may have been 10 years ago even, there was a project out of the University of Minnesota called Just in Time, in which there was a pot of money. I'm not sure how or why, or I don't know if Dr. Temple remembers this, but the idea was this, very much this, that the research would be done just in time for the legislative session so that we could take action. But there was a problem in that the university was very much kind of was doing a good job in getting the research done, but the connection between the legislature was not strong enough so that we would maybe get the reports, but there wouldn't be a presentation in front of the committee, there wouldn't be a committee chair or a passionate author that was engaged to get the legislation written, and, you know, so all those things didn't really happen. So even though it was just in time, sometimes no one picked up on it. And, you know, the professors weren't over here looking for authors.
Absolutely. So. And that's one of the tasks of this task force, is to recommend methods and procedures for conducting and reporting the research. And what we're asking the task force to come forward with for next year is actually a draft legislation necessary to move us forward.
Right.
Thank you very much.
I have one more quick question, Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, just a question that I asked to Senator Bonnoff. Have all these foundations agreed to be part of it, or is this still a little bit of a wish list?
Senator Rummel?
These foundations were, when Mr. Jacobs agreed to host it, these are the foundations he would like to invite. So we have, we just finished this yesterday.
Right.
So it's a work in progress. We will contact them. I did hear from the Bush Foundation yesterday that they're interested in working with us over the interim, so I know they're on board. The university's on board.
And I heard a few weeks ago from Wilder that they were interested, so I need to just confirm with Blandon and some of the others.
Okay.
Any further discussion? And I neglected in the for the previous bill, we heard from people who were supportive, and although we're trying to, we have a big agenda, I should have asked if there was anybody in the audience that was opposed to the legislation and wanted to speak. Is there anybody opposed to Senate File 2496 that wishes to speak at this time?
Madam Chair.
I don't see any. So, Senator Betzel.
Madam Chair, quick note. On lines 1.31, 32, it says that the task force shall report to the legislative committees, et cetera. We normally would say that they report to the chairs and the ranking minority members of the legislative committees. So I would move on the at page 1, line 31, after 2, the chairs and ranking or however it should be worded by Mr. Bonner.
Ranking minority members of the legislative commissions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, we have the Betzel amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rummel, I'm wondering whether your January 15th date is a little bit too rushed, given that at the university there would be the end of December, first of week or January or so, they're on a break. I wonder if you would consider making that like February 1st.
I have no problem with that, Madam Chair.
So Senator Betzel moves to strike January 15th on line 131 and insert February 1st. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. So we have Senate File 2496 as amended before us. Senator Betzel moves that Senate File 2496 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Rules. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? No. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Rummel.
Thank you,
Senator
Madam Chair and Committee.
Metzen here. Oh, there he is. Senator Metzen brings us Senate File 1880. This is a measure that was introduced last year. Reestablishes the Board of Innovation, which was in place during the 90s, right?
Yeah, a few years back, Madam Chair.
Years back. Senator Metzen, welcome
to
the
committee. Thank you very much, and I applaud you and this committee for looking at these innovative ideas, and I don't know how we end up at the end of the day, but if you could take the best of a lot of them and go forward, I think we can come up with some good
results. Well, I think that as we hear about them, that, again, that, they have similar goals, but they're taking a slightly different paths on achieving them, and I think that the kind of flexibility of letting them go forward rather than trying to merge them into one big glob is okay.
Yeah. Well, I applaud particularly a couple of the newer members, Senator Bonneff and Senator Rummel, for being very creative here this session on some of these things. But this is a kind of a take back to the Board of Innovation and Cooperation that Senator Laurie and I know your mother and I and others have worked on this over the years, and of course former Senator Reichstadt, who's to my left and to your right, was one of the leaders along with John Hottinger. I don't know, probably 10 years ago or 12 years ago, I lose track of time. But this was an idea where, let me give you a couple of examples. It would take like city governments, for example, two fire departments would merge into one. So you get one fire chief instead of two. You've got two deputy chiefs instead of four. And what we did was we'd give a little incentive money to the communities to study that and cooperate and collaborate and make one fire department. Another example I think of is in Hutchinson, Minnesota. There were three sand and gravel buildings, a municipal building, a county building, and a state MnDOT building, right? They have salt, sand, gravel, front-end loaders, and they're all within three blocks of one another, right? So we took those, we put a few dollars in, let's study it, let's look at it. Hutchinson ended up with one building, to house their sand, gravel, front-end loaders. But what the board did was give them a little seed money to figure this all out. And, of course, in the long run, it's going to save a lot of taxpayers' money. So there's a kind of one more example. Down in my area in Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota, the community college was going to build a new library addition. The city was going to do one, and the county. So we gave a little grant from the board, and they got together, collaborated. They built one building in the middle of all the three campuses, you know, instead of three. You know, think of the money that's being saved for the taxpayers by doing that. And there were 11 members of this committee, and I was on there. We had the state auditor, we had the commissioner of finance and administration, two administrative law judges, and six legislators, three in the House, three in the Senate. And they had awards, nationally awards, from the way they operated and how they did things there. And so they were recognized nationally for what they were doing. But due to the budget constraints back in 2002, former governor, doesn't matter who, but it was cut out, and I know who it was, but it was cut out. But and again, here's the thinking, I think, is along. We've already got to do things smarter. We have to do more with less. I mean, we just know what the budget constraints that we have to do these kinds of innovative things. And Senator Reichstadt's going to take over now for a minute, but we added on to what I've done before, what the bill is. I had before, we're going to get the private sector involved in this legislation in addition to the governmental people. So with your indulgence, I'll have Senator Reichstadt Young visit a little more on what we're trying to do here.
Reichstadt Young, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's a very special privilege to be here today, particularly chaired by you, Senator Rest. I particularly appreciate the chance to work with Senator Metzen on this bill with regard to the former Minnesota Board of Government Cooperation and Innovation. Senator Metzen was one of the members. It was established in 1993, and then, as you say, it was then eliminated in 2002. But there was a unique power to this board. And the unique power was by matching the resource dollars of state government with removing barriers and obstacles to better delivery of services. And a little seed money really resulted in some great impacts, like Senator Metzen has talked about. And the bottom line overall, about $7 million of savings occurred in that time. However, as I talked with foundation representatives, business representatives, and others, they said we've really got to scale that up. And that's what this model, this bill does, that Senator Metzen is presenting today. And so it does two things. It retains a number of the features of the original legislation, and the most important was that feature of the waiver of administrative rules and temporary limited exemptions of procedural requirements in state law. In other words, a waiver authority from rules and some state laws. What it does is to provide, additionally, the opportunity for nonprofits to request waivers in those particular rules or state laws. And that's a big thing because many times the nonprofits are providing services in the community that could benefit by having a waiver. It brings forth a number of the grant pieces of the former legislation, but the one I want to focus on is one that I think has the most impact and was of most interest to the people I talked with in this conversation with Senator Metzen and foundations and businesses, and that is to expand the Service Budget Management Model grants. Now, what does that mean? Basically, it's models, it's ways that we can reduce administrative expenses, we can be more cost-effective in redesigning services and delivering services more for less. And so the notion here is to not only just have people bring the proposals to the board, but the board can say, hey, we want to develop some proposals of our own. We want to facilitate some proposals. And we want to work with others like foundations to bring them together. Let's say there's an applicant, a local government, but they don't have the money. We say, hey, can we help you put it together with a local foundation? The board would have formal ties to the Legislative Audit Commission, because often the legislative auditor will have a report, but there isn't a place for it to go to have a comprehensive response for a particular service initiative. And so there's ties between the LAC recommending ideas to the board recommending ideas to the LAC. There are other ways to increase cooperation, a clearinghouse of existing ideas from community leaders, a web application, those kinds of things as well. The question you have, of course, is how do we fund it, and how is it staffed, and how is it created? It's an independent board, just like it was in the past. And because we want to broaden its scope and scale it up, it is taking the old model of having administrative commissioners with legislators and adding nonprofit leaders, foundations, and business leaders in order to bring philanthropic resources to the whole operation. So the focus here would be to have two staff, one person skilled in the cooperative waiver process so we can do more of that waiver, more of that redesign of service delivery. The second would be someone skilled in fundraising to create a sustainable source of revenue for it, a revolving fund that could be then replenished in the future as the savings occur in some of these initiatives. Now, how do you fund it? The suggestion would be one-time money of some sort to get it started. Then the staff person would create that ongoing revolving fund so it could be sustained in the future. There's also a requirement that any of these service model, budget management model grants would require at least a 25% match from a foundation in order to go forward with it. Also, the innovation expertise of this board could be sold or purchased as a consultancy by local governments. And so, Madam Chair and members, what this does is take the former Government Board of Innovation Cooperation to a larger step, scales it up so there can be more cost effectiveness, more savings, more cooperation, more opportunities for all of us to see what we want to see, which is deliver more for less.
Are there questions for Ms. Reichgott-Young or Senator Metzen?
Madam Chair, we've even had some examples of where townships merge in a township and a city got together and formed one unit of government. And so that's another example that we saw taking place a couple of times.
That would be retained, Madam Chair, in the provision here where you would have the opportunity to combine cities and there would be grants and opportunities to do that.
I think this is probably the most fleshed out of the proposals that we are getting. And of course, part of it is because it was something that was worked on and established in law, and quite frankly, I think most of us thought it was extremely successful, and I applaud Senator Metzen and yourself, Ms. Reichgott-Young. For those of you who do not know, I succeeded Ms. Reichgott-Young in the Senate. She retired in 2000. I just really think this is a great idea. It's something that ought to go forward again. Whether in the Finance Committee there would be available a state appropriation is probably a long shot, but in their Section 11, they also have the ability for the board to both charge fees for services that they might render to people and also the ability to accept gifts and grants. And Senator Perry, I think that this is a question you raised with regard to Senator Bonoff's bill. They have set up a special revenue account which can act as the fiscal agent for receiving the private gifts and referencing sections in the statutes to be governed by that with regard to accepting of gifts. So I think that's a nice part of it, too.
Madam Chair?
Senator Betzel.
On page 2, there's a couple of blanks, and I'm just wondering how we're going to fill those in. Oops. 2.18, 2.20, 2.22.
Right. What about that? Do you want to, this is the place to put that, to fill in those blanks, Senator Metzen.
I don't know why we, yeah, who they're appointed by, that's a good, I think they should be appointed by Senator Betzold. No, I don't. We haven't. I don't know why I didn't think, why I didn't fill that in, but I suppose it could be by the Speaker and the committee, the committees of the committee, the Senate committee and committees. I think that's the normal. Take some. Well,
Senator Betzold? Well, but
Madam Chair, I mean, we already have on lines 2.10 to 3.13.
Members of the
Members appointed. It appears to me that these are to be people in a particular, you know, academic or expertise.
That's exactly what the language says, right. But I think they could apply to somebody, and I think that somebody still could be the Speaker and the Majority Leader's office, and then that we can it still prescribes, yes, you're right, Mr. Betzel, that it's a nonprofit organization and foundation leadership. It does spell out academic research, so they have to be in that category. So just that we would probably be.
The other issue there on line 2.23, there's nobody who is the appointing authority there. Senator Metzen, would you mind for just a few minutes if we set your bill aside and maybe you can talk with Ms. Reichstadt-Young with the appropriate filling in of the blanks there, and then we'll take the bill right back up again.
Great. I appreciate your help on that.
Okay.
But again, I just repeat that I know this will cost some money up front, but we've proven in the past, members, that you know, with a little seed money up front, we think we could save the ratepayers and the taxpayers millions of dollars going forward, right, if we could adopt something like this legislation.
You know, the Chamber of Commerce is here today, and in the meeting that, or the gathering that I was in, one of their members was talking about the when they respond to requests for proposals, that there's always a line to say on the proposal how much something costs, is going to cost in what they're doing. And he said, why don't you ever ask us how much we're going to save you?
Yeah.
And I thought that was a very astute comment, that we should more often ask not only what's the investment, but what are, you know, whether it's a guarantee or whether it's just an estimate about what the return on that investment is going to be, what the cost savings or the savings to the state or whatever else, whatever other government are going to be. And I think that's what we need to keep in mind here. Senator Gimsey, do you have a comment?
Yeah, Madam Chair, thank you. Do we ever have the board itself or the commission itself make the decision on those additional appointments, solicit input and ask for applications, if you will, and then have them fill those positions?
That could be
places?
That could be done, too. We're going to lay the bill over temporarily and get that done. And as a matter of fact, if that's a suggestion, Senator Metzen, you maybe could say that the Board of Innovation or that the top five, numbers 1 through 5,
yep,
may appoint
the
further members of the board, such as.
Although, Madam Chair, some of the downside of it, we've seen in other bills, is sometimes you get this inbreeding of the board. I mean, you want to have independent authorities putting people on boards.
Yeah.
And when the board decides who gets to be its own members, that leads to problems sometimes.
Okay. Anyway, you've gotten a few suggestions there of how to
proceed. One editorial. When we did this over the years, this honestly was never a partisan board. I mean, we went all over the you know.
Right. No, we know that.
Madam Chair?
Just as a thought, does the governor have any possible appointment authority here? Is that a possibility?
That's another possibility, sure. That they can, you could have the governor making some of these appointments as the people who are the agency heads. So go decide that, and then we'll come back to you.
Madam Chair, I was just going to suggest that since there are three blanks, maybe one be the governor, one be the Senate, one be the House, and, you know, I mean,
let's work it out. You also have to have somebody appointing that number nine on here. Okay. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Senate file, what is it?
Do they have to move it forward? Or no, they got to do that to clean up.
Senate file 1880 is temporarily laid over.
Senator Rust, welcome to the committee in this capacity. Do you have a preference on which bill you'd like to take up first?
I think 2511.
Senate file 2511. Senator Rust.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is another work in progress, and I do have a delete all amendment. It's an A1 amendment. This is a work in progress that is really the efforts of two of our colleagues in the House, Representatives McFarland, Representative Swales, who approached me to carry their bill in the Senate, which I am happy to do. They've been in discussion, working on this, I think, for over a year. At any opportunity where they are together across the state of Minnesota, setting up the parameters for this collaborative governance council, and I don't have any cute name for it, sorry, but this collaborative governance council, and I've done just a bit of wordsmithing from the original bill that's reflected in the delete all amendment, and but it doesn't. Nothing has changed substantively in the delete all amendment, except that there is an a sunset in the there's a sunset in it that it would go for 5 years, and I'm going to. Also, because this is a collaborative governance council that lasts longer than a session or some of these others have been for, other than the Board of Innovation, have been time-limited things where reports are going to be made by February 15th or January 15th or whatever, that the terms of the legislators that would be serving on this are expire with the expiration of their term. So if a senator would be appointed, a House member. If a House member would be, a senator would be appointed to this, and they're elected in 2010 again, that they would have to be reappointed in 2012 rather than just continuing to serve for the entire time that they were at the legislature. So it's just making things that are not automatic, that shouldn't possibly, that don't need to be automatic. Anyway, this governance council is to include major statewide governmental entities and statewide nonprofit organizations and NGOs, as are listed down to line 123. They also are, the council is also encouraged to seek input from non-member organizations to make use of their expertise. The organizational structure now is a little bit different. It's not this board. It's not the University of Minnesota, but it is under the auspices of the State Auditor's Office. The duties of the council are to make recommendations both to the governor and to and the legislature that are designed to increase collaboration in government, and we ask that the council review statutes, which is, I think, a little bit different thing that we've had before, statutes, laws, and rules that slow or prevent collaboration efforts. We've had groups before that have taken a look at unfunded mandates, for example, and this is an opportunity to do this all in one place. And so I think that that is a worthy effort of this group, and obviously to use collaboration to improve delivery of government services, technology, and the looking at modernization of financial transactions, which I think is a different model or a different purpose activity than some of the others, and also looking at and providing, proposing model forms for joint powers agreements. And then recording, asking them to once again submit recommendations, including draft legislation that are necessary to implement the recommendations. We've had that as a guideline for the most part in our four groups like this, because too often we get a report that makes a suggestion but doesn't give us any language to move forward on in terms of a recommendation to change the statutes. Legislation, Representative Swale's bill, is supported by all of the organizations that are listed, and I said that I would not invite them to speak, but that if the member, the representatives are here, are going to raise their hands if they support the bill. Okay. Those are my testifiers, and they've just given their testimonies. Mr. Chair, that is the bill, and I stand for questions. And if you want further discussion from those testifiers of how they've been involved in being reached out to by Representative Swales and Representative McFarland, and I think they'd be happy to come and testify.
Thank you, Senator Rustin. I appreciate the persuasive testimony.
Who doesn't support
Senator Olsen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Rest, would you be open to a verbal amendment similar to the previous bill at line 113, talking about the American Federation of State, County, Municipal
Absolutely.
Employees,
mm-hmm.
going to Council 5 and 65?
Senator Rest?
And that would then be, my amendment then would be on line 1.7 of the delete all, strike 12. And insert 13. And then on line 113, Mr. McGowan, are you helping us out here since Mr. Bodern is out of the room? On line 113, after employees, let's see, how should we do that? Do we have the language of the Bonoff bill?
Yeah.
Do you have that in front of you, Mr. Chairman?
We don't, but I think that on line 1.7, what right now reads, has 12 members, including the state auditor, and one member appointed by each serving at the pleasure of each of the following. So if we tried to do two in one of the lines, it would... After line 113, you might just insert, you know, so line 113 would read AFSCME Council of 5, and line, you'd insert a new one that said AFSCME Council 65.
So it would be 65. Then to strike 12 and insert 13 at 17, and then at 113, after employees, say Council 5, and then after and insert
6
after line 113, American Federation of County, State, and Municipal Employees Council 65.
Yes, that would be my amendment, Mr. Chairman. And then renumber the sections accordingly.
That would be my amendment.
I think that does it. Any questions about that amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Olsen amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rest? Or you've completed. Any other questions of members? Seeing none, would anyone in the audience care to testify in opposition to the bill? Oh, we did not. We just adopted an amendment to the A1 amendment. We have not yet adopted the A1 amendment. So we have the A1 amendment as adopted in front of us. Senator Rest
as
moves
amended.
Adoption.
I move the A1 amendment.
Of the A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the bill in shape in front of us. Again, anyone from the audience care to testify in opposition to Senate File 2511? Seeing none, Senator Rest moves.
Mr. Chairman, I had asked for that, the amendment dealing with the legislators that their terms come to an end when their term is up.
Do we have that right?
Mr. Bottern has the language.
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 32, or after line 32, you can insert a new paragraph F that says, the term of a legislative member of the council corresponds with the term of office held by the member at the time of appointment.
Okay. That would be my amendment.
Everyone understand the amendment? Any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, Senator Rest moves the oral amendment as stated by Mr. Bottern. All those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Now, Senator Rest moves Senate File 2511, as amended, be recommended to pass and referred to
rules.
The Rules Committee. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rust, do you want to take up your next bill?
Yes, sir.
2516.
No. Huh? Senate? Yeah, 25. Yes, 2516 is also a bill that was introduced and the work done on it by one of our colleagues in the House, Representative Thiessen, and he asked me to carry it in here in the Senate. And he also calls for a coalition for innovation and collaboration. Does have, again, purpose language in it, and the members, I think if you look at it, it more, again, describes a duty rather than a philosophical purpose, and so I don't think it is a objectionable language. The Department of Administration is where this particular coalition would be housed, and it also is a multi-sector collaborative to whose job it is to facilitate innovation and collaboration now across sectors, and it asks for feedback and input from the public and private and so forth. It has something similar to the Board of Innovation by setting up a way in which not-for-profit organizations as reaching out to them as well as what is in current law governments to be eligible to receive waivers from rules and regulations in order to further their work. And in addition, back in and this again, I think is one of those good ideas, and whether or not it's fundable is still up in the air. Is the that there are, the work includes innovation challenge grants. If you look at sub four, and it is a competitive grant program that Senator Representative Thiessen called the Innovation Challenge. And it, once again, is to provide seed funding for ideas, for programs or service improvements. It is. It would be my intent, if we act favorably on this bill, to work with Senator Metzen to probably put some of these ideas into his bill going forward, but I'm not prepared to do that at this time. But I think all of these bills are trying to bring Minnesota to the cutting edge of new ideas and incentives and challenges for governments to work together with the private sector, including the nonprofit sector, which this bill is aimed at specifically to deliver better services and better value for Minnesota citizens.
Okay.
And I know of no opposition to the bill.
Do you have testifiers you'd?
No.
Okay. Any questions of members? Seeing none. You have no amendments?
Nope.
Anyone from the audience care to speak either in favor or in opposition to Senate File 2516? Seeing none. Senator Rest moves Senate File 2516 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. On that motion, any discussion?
Mr. Are we Mr. making Betzold. Appointments here that would require to go to Rules?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Betzold, the Chairman of the Rules Committee has asked that all of these bills dealing with innovation and whatever come to the Rules Committee before okay. they go anywhere else.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator
so
Pappas.
That's before Finance, in other words, too.
Yes.
Okay.
Any other questions on Senator Rust's motion? Seeing none, Senator Rust renews her motion that Senate File 2516 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Rust. Done. Oh, yeah. Senator, okay. Is Senator Metzen completed or is he ready to go again? No. Senator Higgins, Senate File 2809.
Good afternoon, Mr. or Madam Chair, who's ever got the gavel at this point, and
Senator
committee members.
Senator Higgins brings us Senate File 2809.
And Madam Chair, I have an A1 amendment that's a delete-all.
A1 amendment will be distributed. This is the first committee, is it not? No, Senator Higgins?
Yes.
First committee?
And Madam Chair, I'd like to make two changes to this.
Okay.
One on line 28 of page 1 and the other on line 2.7, changing the Commissioner of Labor and Industry to the Commissioner of Deed, whatever that stands for these days.
Oh, yeah. What is the proper name of Deed?
Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Commissioner of...
The Department of Employment.
Madam Chair, I think it's if you're referring to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development. It would be the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development.
The Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development, strike of Labor and Industry, and insert of Employment and
Economic Development.
Okay, we do that on line 28, and then 128, and then what?
Page 2, line 7.
Page 2, line 7, same thing.
Yes.
That is the will be incorporated into the delete everything amendments and author's amendment. Senator Olsen moves adoption of the A1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Senator Higgins.
Thank you very much. Hire Minnesota, a coalition of more than 70 organizations and thousands of community leaders all over the state, worked closely last year with Senator Anderson and other key legislators to pass Senate File 657, a bill that guided the use of energy-related federal stimulus funds, and that bill was signed into law last May. Based on the successful passage of that bill, Hire Minnesota is now working to apply those same equitable hiring principles to projects that are funded through bonding. And Senate File 2809 is before you to address that issue, and it would do two main things. It would require that bond-funded projects include plans for a diverse workforce, and it would require regular reporting to the Department of now DEED, who would then collect the reports and get them in a good, usable fashion for the legislative committees with jurisdiction over bonding. And the A1 amendment redefined the requirements to be the state agencies, MNSCU, and the University of Minnesota, and it delays the effectiveness for the local governments and municipalities till 2012. We figured that they were probably not as far down the line in being able to work with our state agencies to get that information to us in a timely fashion. So we thought we'd give them time to get going. I have with me today Jeff Bauer, who is the Director of Public Policy for Family and Children's Services, and he is a member of the Hire Minnesota, and he knows a lot about this whole subject. I'm pleased to have him with us today.
Yes. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Bauer, if you would identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to speak very briefly today. I'm Jeff Bauer. I'm the Director of Public Policy for Family and Children's Service. For those of you who don't know, we're one of the oldest nonprofits in the state of Minnesota, and we were founded by the first ever mayor of Minneapolis, so we've been around a long time. And we're also proud members of the Hire Minnesota Coalition. Senator Higgins did a great job of describing us, so I don't even have to. But many of you probably remember us from last session when we were all over the hearing rooms and the halls of the Capitol. You might have remembered the Summit Academy carpentry students and their hard hats and yellow vests. They were here earlier today around the halls of the Capitol again. And so, as Senator Higgins said, the bill we worked on last year was a great success. It incorporated a lot of these equity principles, and actually since that time has become a national model, nationally recognized model, of how to do equitable and fair hiring around public investments. And so we learned a couple of things during that process last year. One is that the community interest and energy behind this is immense. I remember our very first Hire Minnesota town hall meeting was on a freezing cold, snowy night at the Urban League in North Minneapolis. And we thought, okay, we're talking about green jobs and public investment. We'll have a couple dozen people. And 200 people showed up. And we thought, something is happening here. And so we did our next meeting at the Lau Family Center, just a few blocks down University Avenue from where you're sitting, and 400 people showed up. And the last one we did was at the American Indian Center on Franklin Avenue, and 600 people showed up. And we thought, there's something going on here. But the point I want to make, too, is it's not just community interest. It's not just community members hoping to get these jobs that they're not trained for. They just want a job. We're talking about lots and lots of highly trained folks, including the Summit Academy students, who are ready to work. They're ready to work right now in these jobs. The last point I want to leave you with, because this has come up quite a bit, is, wow, how does labor feel about this? They have a lot of folks on the bench. They have a lot of people waiting to get into these jobs. And I'm proud to tell you today, actually, the Carpenters Union this morning said you can express our full support for this bill. We're ready to work with you. We think there's a balance to be found here, too, and so we're very, very happy about that. So we just ask for your support today. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about this. Thank you.
Are there questions for Senator Higgins or Mr. Bauer? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is similar to a bill we just heard in state government finance that only asked for one part of this, and that was a number of jobs created and retained by the bonding projects. It came with a $500,000 fiscal note. And so it was laid on the table in that committee. But this asks for much, much more information. And I am wondering, I know this is a policy committee, but I'm wondering if that has been taken into consideration of how the data will be collected and when it's much greater. I mean, there's a part of this that I certainly was supporting, the number of jobs created. It was an amendment that was actually defeated on the Senate floor when we did the bonding bill. But, this has a lot more information needed. So I'm just wondering if you've asked about a fiscal note on it yet.
Yeah, Senator Roebling, the bill will go to the Finance Committee and get the same scrutiny that Senator Bonoff's bill does. But I think one of the things that may lessen the fiscal impact is the date that you have for the counties and the local governments is pushed out a year, so maybe it's not.
Recipients are the ones who reported here.
Fiscal year this year.
As opposed to being elected by the agency.
And Ms. Shaver-Pellinen points out that who's doing the reporting in this bill is the recipient of the proceeds, not the state agency getting the money. Not the state agency getting the going out and getting the report. So that might be I don't know if that's another wrinkle that Senator Bonoff could consider in the bill that she had that at least
Madam Chair,
five of us heard just this afternoon. Senator.
Madam Chair, didn't we talk about earlier today something like 1.12, 1.14, that it's part of the bid or part of the proposal? Mm-hmm. So that helps with, if the contractor is aware that they've got to come up with those numbers and report on that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
Another question. On line 1.5, when we're talking about bond proceeds recipients, is this in a section of law that is speaking only about our state bonding dollars? It's very clear that it isn't bond proceeds from any other that like a county might be letting or a city.
Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, Mr. Bodern helped us write this, but this is meant to be the state bonding bills. So if it's not phrased correctly, we should fix that. But what we intend is the state bonding bill that we're all working on.
Madam Chair, it is coded in Chapter 16A, which deals in part with the state, the law pertaining to capital appropriations. It could be a cross-reference. An additional cross-reference would be helpful.
Senator Roebling, would you
Madam
think that
Chair,
would be a good
I think
idea?
That would clarify it.
Mr. Bonner, do you can you give us some?
Madam Chair, I think what I need to look for is another definition within Chapter 16A that will clarify. We're talking about the bond appropriations from the state here. I need a minute to find that.
Or, Madam Chair, we can fix it in state government finance if it turns out to be a lengthy process.
Why don't we just wait a second to see if he can fix it here. Is there further discussion? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Higgins, we also have laws on the books about minority hiring for various projects, minority contractors, women. How does that expand that? How does this expand those laws?
Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, just yesterday I had a bill in the Transportation Committee dealing with the DBEs, the Disadvantaged Business Enterprises, and they work under federal regulations. We do have some programs here in the state that require some goals. Frankly, a lot of times there are very lax overview of actually getting the goals that supposedly are in place. We don't have goals as such here. We don't have a percentage. We don't have anything like that. So many times what we have in law is specifically women, specifically people of color. You'll notice that we have also in our bill here, we're asking for recruitment in low-income communities, rural communities, the tribal communities, and communities of color. So we're trying to reach out to a greater group than probably was before there. Maybe Mr. Bauer can expand on that better than I just did. Madam Chair? Let's go ahead. Say Madam Chair.
Okay, Madam Chair. if I might also try and answer that. There are the laws you referred to currently in statute referring to state contracting, and so currently anyone who gets a state contract directly has some of those provisions. What this does do is expand that beyond state agencies to, for example, apply to the University of Minnesota or MinSCU, and it also, as Senator Higgins said, broadens a little bit what those are. The final difference is that this requires certain things at the time of the bid, at the time of the proposal. That's a bit different than how the statute might relate to these.
Mr. Bodden is ready with the amendment.
Madam Chair, I think I came fairly close here, but on page 1, line 12, the easiest way to do this would be to delete bond proceeds and insert money from the bond proceeds fund established under section 16A.631, and that would make it very clear this refers only to state bond appropriations.
Senator Roebling moves that amendment. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there further discussion? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak in opposition? Seeing none, Senator Rolstein moves that Senate file 2809 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Yeah. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Senator Higgins. Senator Metzen, are you ready?
More Band-Aids.
We'll return to and take Senate file 1880 is now before us.
Madam Chair, with the help of counsel and Senator Reichgott, I think we've got the proper appointing authorities on four of those
Mr. Bodden, do you have the positions. Suggested amendment?
Madam Chair, it's a slightly lengthier oral amendment, but I think the concepts are simple enough. We can take care of it this way.
Okay.
On page 2, line 18, delete appointed by and insert including one member appointed by the Chancellor of the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities and one member appointed by the President of the University of Minnesota.
Okay.
And on page 2, line 20, delete appointed by and insert comma appointed by the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits, including one member from an organization with statewide membership and one member from a human services organization. I think that last part of it is correct. And then on page 2, line 21, after leadership, insert, comma, including one member from a foundation making statewide grants. And on page 2, line 22, insert the Minnesota Council on Foundations.
And then what about
and I'm sorry, there's one more on page 2, line 23, after corporation, insert appointed by the Chamber of Commerce.
Okay. That would be Senator Olsen's motion to amend. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 1880 as amended before us. Senator Olsen moves that Senate File 1880 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Rules. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very
Thank
much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
Senator Metzen. Senator Clark.
You don't have to do that. I know. Damn. That's my the hallway.
Senator Clark brings us Senate File 2861.
And Madam Chair, we have a delete everything amendment. We have a delete everything amendment, if it's possible, to the A3.
Madam Chair, and I will, when it's passed out, I'll move the A3 amendment.
Senator Pappas moves the A3 amendment, the author's amendment. Does everybody have it now?
Not yet. Thank you.
Senator Pappas moves on behalf of the author the A3 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We now have Senate File 2861 before us as the author wishes. Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. When the Minnesota Men's Action Network was looking for a site to host its annual meeting, they had one request, a clean hotel. This group wanted a hotel that provided clean choices on the television, meaning no sexually violent material available even on the pay-per-view channels. When they approached Dutch Craig and the owner of Craigan's Resort in Brainerd, he didn't know what was meant by a clean hotel either, but he quickly realized that this was not only a decision he could make to secure this group's business, but it was good for his business as a family resort to put public health first and safety by becoming a clean resort. So on behalf of business owners like Dutch, on behalf of organizations like the Minnesota Men's Action Network that want different options, and on behalf of organizations advocating for women and survivors like the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault, we're here today to help them promote a new option for all of us, clean hotels. Let me be clear, this is not about policing people's personal choices. This bill is not mandate or eliminate anything from hotels. This bill is about taking another step to reduce sexual violence in our society by encouraging hotels to make more clean environments available. This bill would use our purchasing power as a state to help address a serious public health issue, the correlation between violent sexual imagery and the 61,000 sexual assaults in Minnesota each year. Recent research shows a high correlation between sexually violent imagery and the attitudes that lead to sexual violence. This correlation is statistically even stronger than the relationship between smoking and lung cancer. We can use the state's purchasing power to create hotel environments that are free from this violent material, and that helps travelers, especially women and families, feel safer. This is about creating more options not only for our state employees, but all travelers to choose a clean hotel. So what does the bill do? The bill before you, as in the amended form, is a bipartisan effort that says our preference is for state employees when traveling on official business to stay in hotels that do not sell pay-per-view adult movies whenever that option is available at a comparable cost. This bill does not ask hotels to get rid of existing premium cable networks like HBO, which we have gotten many contacts about. The Clean Hotels Bill is designed to help hotels and resorts, decide that they would rather not carry sexually violent movies in their in-house systems, helping create a market and a resource for clean hotels. This bill is also to ensure our state employees are in healthy, safe environments when they're traveling on state business. Let's face it, these movies are available for one simple reason: to make profits for an industry that has nothing to do with the hotel or the people coming to stay. This will help put some financial weight on the other side of the equation. It simply says that given the choice, the state will choose to spend its dollars in hotels that have adopted these clean, violence-free policies. The effective date is established as July 1st, 2011, to provide ample time for the state and providers to prepare for implementation. It also asks the administration to report back to committee chairs at the beginning of the next legislative session on efforts to implement these policies, allowing the legislature the opportunity to make technical adjustments to this policy if need be. Madam Chair and members, we have a couple of witnesses, Chuck Derry from the Gender Violence Institute and Jeannie Martin from the MNCASA are here today to present brief testimony in support of this bill.
Welcome to the committee. Who would like to go first?
Gender free. I can go first.
Ms. Martin.
Senator Rest and members of the committee, my name is Jean Martin. I am the program manager for the Victim Services Program for Dodge, Fillmore, and Olmsted County, and I'm also here today on behalf of the Minnesota Coalition Against Sexual Assault. My program is a member of the MNCASA program, and I also serve as co-chair of MNCASA's Public Policy Committee. MNCASA supports Senate File 2861 and the proposal to establish a preference for purchasing in-state travel and meeting services from facilities that offer clean hotel environments. We've worked with Senator Clark on this proposal through the past months and also over the past year on the Policy and Legislative Action Team, of which I'm also a member. It's a community advisory group convened by the Minnesota Department of Health to help implement the state's five-year sexual violence prevention plan. As Senator Clark referenced, there is a MDH study that tells us that 61,000 Minnesotans are victims of sexual violence each year. The department describes the problem of sexual violence as actually being endemic. That means that this incidence of sexual assaults has become the norm in Minnesota. So changing a public health problem of this proportion is no easy task. We can't simply prosecute or jail our way out of this problem. We can't simply keep educating potential victims about risks and hope that they can stop it on their own. I know I've been having these kinds of conversations with young people for over a decade, and I can assure you that the concerns and negative life experiences of youth has changed dramatically over this period of time. To really affect change, then, we also need to challenge and change those social practices that contribute to the problem of sexual violence, and especially those that have become so widespread that they've actually become accepted norms or viewed as just intractable. So the increasing link between violent, sexually explicit entertainment and violence against women and children is one of those problems, as the accessibility of this kind of degrading sexual material has intensified over the past 10 years. So we've seen the emergence of the kind of research that Senator Clark mentioned, with a strong correlation between the consumption of these violent images and attitudes and aggressive behaviors that lead to sexual violence. So the Clean Hotels Initiative is one way to work at breaking this link and to have an impact on preventing sexual violence. It's not a new state program, but rather an effort to establish the practice of simply asking the question, are you a clean hotel? And enabling the option to choose to take the state's business to places that have stepped up to be a part of the solution to sexual violence. In fact, in Rochester, where we're working on this locally with our Convention and Visitors Bureau, the sales manager there shared with me that he now asks the question proactively, does your convention, if you come to Rochester, does your convention require the availability of a pornography-free accommodation? This is not something the state of Minnesota can do alone. We're working with others around the state in adopting policy for clean hotel purchasing preferences. As I mentioned, I've been working in Olmsted County with department heads and the hospitality industry to bring them in as partners on this and other approaches to preventing sexual violence. I'd be happy to talk to you or respond to any questions about that. But in closing, I'd simply like to say that we recognize the challenge of breaking through the noise and agitation that gets triggered when we talk about a policy decision like this. But sexual violence is a serious public health issue. 61,000 Minnesotans victimize each year with an $8 billion economic impact. Most of the members of this committee know full well the cost of dealing with the problem after the harm has been done. So Senate File 2861 is a no-cost step that the state can take toward keeping the harm from happening in the first place and making prevention of sexual violence in Minnesota a priority in Minnesota. So thank you very much for your time, and I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much, Ms. Martin. And Mr. Derry?
Senator Arrest and members of the committee, my name is Chuck Derry, and I am the co-founder of the Gender Violence Institute in Clearwater, Minnesota. I'm also the co-coordinator of the Minnesota Men's Action Network Alliance to Prevent Sexual and Domestic Violence. I should note that I also co-convene the Policy and Legislative Action Team to support the implementation of the Minnesota Department of Health's five-year plan that Gene referred to on sexual violence prevention. If I may, I would also like to take a moment to acknowledge Senator Clark's willingness to respond to my request and MCASA's request to bring this idea before the legislature for consideration. I became most informed about the potential impact of clean hotel purchasing policies on sexual violence prevention through my work with the Department of Health's prevention plan. Clearly, we would like to see the state, other units of government, businesses, community groups, and even individuals engaged in the practice of asking the question, are you a clean hotel? So they can then have the option of choosing where to take the travel or meeting business. At the Minnesota Men's Action Network, we didn't feel we could ask others to adopt this practice unless we made it a part of our own. So when we started the search last year to find a location for our 2009 annual conference, we started to ask providers if they had clean hotel policies and practices. It was not the only criteria we were using in our site search, but provided our costs and logistical needs were met, we certainly wanted to give preference to a site that offered a clean hotel environment. In March of last year, I contacted Cragen's Resort and Conference Center near Brainerd to discuss the possibility of the Men's Action Network hosting a state conference in October. The only problem was that Cragen's provided adult pay-per-view pornography in their sleeping rooms. I had done business with Mavis Zachary up there. She's the sales manager. I had done business with her previously and knew her to be an aggressive advocate for Cragen's business. I thought I would put the question to her. Would they be willing to remove adult pay-per-view pornography from their resort and conference center? I explained to her the dilemma I was in. We really wanted to have a conference at Cragen's, but could not in good conscience bring men together from all over Minnesota to discuss how we might change the environment which supports sexual and domestic violence, while at the same time stay in a facility that was, in fact, supporting that very same environment through its practice of providing pay-per-view pornography in their sleeping rooms. Mavis asked if we had decided on a location as yet. I told her we had not, but we had planned to soon. She asked me if I would give her a week. I told her yes, we would. Mavis contacted me 5 days later to say she had shared the information I sent her regarding the correlations between pornography use and increased violence against women with Dutch Cragen and his wife Irma, and they decided they would remove the material from their establishment. They were able to renegotiate the contracts within 30 days with the provider. In May of 2009, then, the Minnesota Office of Justice Programs held their annual Victims' Rights Conference at Cragen's Resort and awarded Dutch and Irma Cragen a certificate which read, in quotes, in recognition of Dutch and Irma Cragen for their continued commitment to provide an atmosphere dedicated to the well-being of their guests and employees by establishing Cragen's as a pornography-free, clean hotel. Through their leadership, Cragen's Resort and Hotel has demonstrated their commitment to excellence through socially responsible business practices and to the vision of a world free from sexual and domestic violence, unquote. In Mr. Cragen's acceptance speech, he said he and Irma had spent many years building a family-friendly resort with the intention of providing a sanctuary for their guests, a place where they could relax without worry and enjoy their families and friends. This new policy was just an extension of that business principle. So it is in this spirit that the Minnesota Men's Action Network asks you to pass this bill forward. And Minnesota once again provide the model to the nation of how we can build that community, that sanctuary, where men and women and girls and boys can live to their full potential. and the threat and reality of sexual and domestic violence becomes a thing of the past. Thank you for allowing me to speak with you today and for your commitment to preventing sexual and domestic violence in Minnesota.
Madam Chair. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you, Senator Clark, for this very creative approach to putting some pressure on these hotels. I wish I could use your help. It's very creative in thinking what we can also do with the violent video game issue in restricting access to youth under 16. Now, I worked on that for a number of years and ended up losing it in a constitutional trial. Constitutional challenge in the courts, which I had a hard time understanding or believing, because we still, these very violent videos, which are, you know, as violent as some of the movies that you're talking about, are still very much available to young people. You know, there's a rating system, but there's no consequence for not abiding by it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
And Senator Pappas. Something we all need to keep working on, and certainly, I mean, I think part of this is what we do as individuals. This happens to be about the purchasing power of the state and the kinds of decisions that we can make. And as a preference, it's not banning. It is just saying this is our preference. And, you know, I've had some people ask about, isn't this about just the employee then? No, it's not about the employee. It's about the environment and what we're saying about our society. And as a mom like you, and I remember you have daughters, I have sons, and I remember when our older son Colin was in kindergarten and we were trying to not ever have him watch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because when he watched it, he acted like it. He ended up living vicariously through his friends. I mean, we live in a culture that we need to keep decreasing this. These particular types of movies, sexually explicit, violent movies, are really creating some, this has been something we've seen increased over time. I've had a number of people being very surprised at what some of the content would be. And again, what people are doing in their own personal lives is just, that's up to them. Let's continue to work creatively, but I do think it's important that we're acknowledging that a lot of this has to do with our own individual choices and about what we're choosing to let our kids see or not see. I have had a number of constituents and others talk to me about, look, I went down the hall to get ice. I came back, and my grandkids were watching fill in the blank. I mean, so there are those issues. I also think it's important to reinforce that we've got an incredible hospitality industry. Tourism is a critical part of this, and this is a possibility of offering a market niche. And I know that Mr. Derry and others have described to me that we've had some of the owners saying, look, we don't want this. We're having a hard time decoupling these particular movies, and you might want to talk about that from our packages. But if there is enough market force saying we don't want this, it gives us more leverage to go back. So I think we should be looking at this as trying to be partners with those who want to. We did do a survey in my community. We only have one hotel out of all of them that's offering it. We know that Rochester has been working on this in Winona, so we're starting to see some of these. But that means from our employees' standpoint, just like we did with regard to the Freedom to Breathe Act, we're just saying our preference is that you don't have to be in environments where this is something that is available in that way, knowing that some will still be bringing their computers and other things too. Did you want to respond to that?
Sure.
Additional comments?
Thank you. Yes, I would just mention that our hospitality industry in Rochester, those that I've worked with, were real open to working with us on this, and they're seeking to, they took it to their corporate level to be able to remove the pornography from the Kaler Hotels, which has four properties in Rochester, and are coming up with their own creative ideas, such as can we create an icon that when you look for a hotel that you can see there's a hotel that would accept your pet. How about if there's an icon that would also indicate that this is a clean hotel for you and your family or your business to stay at? So they're coming up with their own creative ideas.
Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've been hearing a lot of bills today that may or may not have fiscal notes. Is this one going to?
Senator Clark?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, no. We removed, there was an actual report. We all know that reports cost money. We are asking the department just to come back and say, here are our suggestions about implementation. There's some things they may do, but there's no must. We already have a ceiling. with how much our employees could end up expending when they're getting a hotel room or at a resort. So those limits would still be in there. So no, there is not.
Mr. Chair. Senator Clark, this bill is going to finance, though, is what?
No, Ms. At one point we thought there needed to be, but we don't have the reports gone, so there is not a fiscal that we've been checking with the fiscal staff for Sarah Betzold's committee. My understanding is it can go to the floor.
Okay. Senator Olsen, a follow-up?
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair, because I would think that to establish the, you know, what motels the state employees can go to, that the way I've been seeing fiscal notes fly around here, that they would put some money on that, so that if you're following me?
Sure, yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Senator Clark.
And Senator Olsen, I would say these tough fiscal times that it would be the goal of any agency to attempt to figure out how they could keep some resources in their department. But this is simply about asking the question. I mean, certainly my hope would be, and I've talked with Mr. Rhodes about this, our hope would be that, you know, that yes, there could end up being a list at some point that would be easy for employees to find. But if a group is coming together and compiling that, it's hard to see that that would be much of a cost. But it's not requiring that. It does go back to what Ms. Martin and Mr. Derry were saying, though, is asking, does your facility have a clean hotel policy? And, frankly, it's not really much more than that, at least at this point. And again, I believe that since we're not implementing this until July 1st of 2011, should there be some other things that the Department of Administration believes needs to be taken into account, we can address it next session.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm wondering, and I certainly, you know, do not support any promotion of sexual violence, but there's... This is going to be a very small step, I believe, because we have access to this on the internet. And so even if a hotel has that policy, if they have internet service, someone coming in with a computer could still be viewing it. Isn't that true?
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Roebling, I would like to have one of the two of these respond. But I think it's about our purchasing power and what we're saying, that our preference is to do with our resources. And if what we're saying is that sexually explicit, violent material is something we want to have in an atmosphere, that's one thing. But we have an opportunity to say we choose to spend our dollars differently. And so while some may still choose to do that, that's different than an environment that it's there and readily available. And again, this is also partly about the marketing and opportunity of decoupling material that we have certainly heard there are a number of entities that do not wish to have. But it gives them more power back saying, no, we don't want this as part of our package. So, no, it wouldn't be everything, but it is a statement about who we are and where we're willing to put our dollars. And it doesn't, you know, if you think about it, if it's not an additional cost to the state, why wouldn't we want to be saying, we know that there's a link here, and that we do not want to be expending our resources in places when there are other options. Where there's another option, why wouldn't we want our dollars spent there where it's comparable in cost? And again, I think that either Ms. Martin or Mr. Derry may have some other thoughts with that.
Did you say? Mr. Chair, Senator, I would just add that this bill, as we're looking at public health model and looking at the environment, and how do we remove toxins from the environment so that we can have healthy communities? This is really about the mainstreaming of this sexually violent and degrading material. And all of you have probably witnessed that mainstreaming. Some folks are calling it pornified culture, where you're seeing this in marketing and you're seeing it in other places outside of this material, where you're seeing the sexual exploitative representations of women and increasingly of younger and younger children. And so, again, I would agree with the statements of Senator Clark about that this is really about how do we start to remove our financial support for the mainstreaming, that this just becomes normal. We just become accustomed to the fact that you go in a hotel and there you can get adult pay-per-view sexually violently degrading material. And we're saying that that is not a place where the state generally would want to use public funding.
Senator Roebling, follow-up.
Thank you. Senator Clark, on the exceptions, when you say that if it is not reasonably available, a clean hotel, that a written explanation of that circumstance is maintained with the record of payment. And I'm wondering, just on a practical side, not that anyone's traveling anywhere right now for state travel, but if you go to a conference, maybe a national or a regional conference, and there are other hotels available, but you're in a block of rooms for that conference that may not have that, is that going to be, do you think, an acceptable explanation of why you would be staying at that hotel so you could get reimbursed for it?
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Robley, I think that this is exactly the kind of thing that could be discussed in the next year, but as somebody who in my former life had to participate in many meetings, I did not necessarily stay in the block. There were times where I actually found a least costly alternative or other kinds of things, so I think it depends. If this is the option in the area, then this would be what would be available. But I think what would happen is that the employer or employees that were participating would be asking the question up front. And that's something, again, it only took the question of is this a clean hotel? I would hope it would mean then that as, you know, whether it is an agency or there's a meeting of an association where we have state employees at that is the part of the conference planning, that they're going to be asking that question and that they will pick an option that would be a clean hotel.
Senator, also, it's just applying to conferences within the state.
Oh, yeah. And excuse me, I'm reminded that it also is just applying to conference within the state.
So I'll just wait.
Senator Betzold, you had a question as well.
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, you made some references to the report being removed. Are you referring to the report that's on page 2 in section 3?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Betzold, all it is coming and reporting to a committee. It's not an actual report.
Making a report.
Perhaps the title should be, the section should be titled differently, and maybe that was not changed. Previously, there was an actual report that was requested, but instead, this is just supposed to be coming to the committee, the chairs, report to the chairs what its progress is. It's just a report back. So if you believe, Senator Betzel, we need different words, we can certainly change the words.
But, you know, Mr. Chair and Senator Clark, the bill, as you had it introduced, required the commission administration to report to the chairs of the legislative committees having jurisdiction of the Department of Administration. And this says the commission administration it looks like the same thing. You know, it's a different process, so I'm not quite sure, what's changed.
Mr. Chair and Senator Betzold, if you have idea of different words, what we clarified with the Department of Administration is they were not expected to go out and doing research. They were not expected to go and put together a compository or anything else, which was originally what they thought was going to require the resources. The intent here is not to have them do a fancy report. It's just to have them come back and report on what whether or not there should be any technical changes or other things based on the conversations with the industry and others in the interim. So I would certainly be open as a friendly amendment to other language.
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, the point is, it might be de minimis, but if this generates a fiscal note, you understand what the process you have to go through.
Right. And Mr. Chair, Senator Betzel, my understanding, as we have talked about it, does not generate a fiscal note.
Well,
so if we need some other language here, that we can certainly do that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Clark, I don't know what's going to generate a fiscal note or not, so if you send it.
Mr. Chairman, we do have two more bills to do, and we are supposed to recess and come back at 6 o'clock. We do need to move on these bills.
Madam Chair?
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to move the bill, but I didn't know if anyone else wanted to testify, so I'm just ready to do that.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if we're a Mr. or Madam Chair at the moment. Sarah Pappas, before I do it, the one question that has been up there, and we've been going back and forth about this, is whether or not on lines 1.18, we've got what we're wanting to do is having the cost of the preferred site is comparable. And so there is a threshold, as I said at the beginning of when we were talking about this, that we cannot go over the limits of what the state allows right now. So our belief is that this would not cost more money. I believe there may be some concern about that. And so if it makes the administration more comfortable, we certainly can go ahead and strike the language, the cost of the preferred site is comparable. So it would strike the 20%. Let them deal with it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I think if we changed on line 1.18 and we said the cost of the preferred site is comparable to services at a non-preferred site.
Yes.
So we would then delete more than 20% above the cost for.
Is that your motion to amend, Senator Pappas?
Yes.
You've heard Senator Pappas's motion to amend. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted.
So inserted.
Is there further discussion? We have one person who wishes to speak in opposition to the bill. Would he come forward, please? Mr. Francis Jenkins White. They'll step down. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
My name is Francis Jenkins White, and I was actually asked to come and represent the views of my friend and associate, Joseph Miller. He couldn't be here today due to work constraints, but I have a written statement.
That's fine.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to thank you for taking the time to hear me today. In regards to Senate File 2861, it is my belief that it is an unwise piece of legislation in concept, specifics, and execution. Conceptually speaking, the bill is a classic case of trying to regulate people's thoughts and desires. Having a desire to view so-called violent pornography is not illegal, nor is the pornography itself. Attempting to regulate this desire, even in the context of state officials, is far beyond the authority of government. If the state feels that people shouldn't view or shouldn't have these kinds of desires to view this kind of material, then the legislation should instead make these materials illegal rather than using roundabout ways to stigmatize their use. Specifically, many healthy forms of sexual role play, eroticized domination, traditional role play, lots of kinds of traditional role play, including doctor, nurse, or boss, secretary, or things like that, are all rooted in the same ideas that make hardcore BDSM tantalizing, specifically a disparity in authority between the consenting members. Many perfectly responsible couples experiment with the consensual use of blindfolds or handcuffs, but the language of the bill brings all of these healthy deviations from vanilla sexuality into questionable area of permissibility. If the woman is blindfolded during sex, does that eroticize domination? Some might say so. Some might say it's purely a way to maximize sensation through sensory deprivation. The bottom line is that it is all ultimately consensual, so such activities should not be regulated in the home or the media. In terms of execution, the bill is much too broad. Not only is it attempting to regulate the thoughts of state officials, but it also punishes businesses for offering legitimate services to clientele other than the officials you want to control. Imagine if there was a legislation outlawing a state official staying at a hotel because that hotel offered a Christian movie selection. I personally find Christian movies silly and generally offensive, despite being a Christian myself. Should we punish that business for offering a legal type of movie to its customers? We would also be punishing those customers who appreciated that movie selection in a totally unjust way, despite their preference in movie being legitimate. In conclusion, I would say that this bill is a terrible idea, and it is my strong belief that it should be recommended not to pass. It is conceptually a tyrannical first step towards regulating people's thoughts and desires, and specifically is written to be too broad and to include healthy forms of sexual expression, and is executed in such a way as to punish many innocent people. Thank you for your time, and I'd be glad to answer any questions the committee has.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins White, are there any questions or comments from the committee members for Mr. Jenkins White?
But Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Ms. Martin, appreciate your testimony. Senator
Pappas. Madam Chair, Mr. Bonner and I have discussed different language for 118. That's probably better. So I'd like to move reconsideration of the amendment.
Senator Pappas moves reconsideration of the oral amendment, which she offered to line 118. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. And
then I'd like to offer the amendment and have Mr. Bonner read it.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, on page 1, line 18, I think what you need to do is delete is more than 20% above, or excuse me, more than 20% above. I believe the is there. No, no.
No, take out the is.
We need to delete is more than 20% above. And then I think what Senator Pappas, we discussed, does not exceed, but I think what works better is to insert exceeds the cost. And that would allow you the exception. If the preferred site cost exceeds the cost for comparable services at a non-preferred site, then the exception applies. I think that's the way you want it to read.
So read the whole sentence?
The way the new clause would read is that, and reading it together with paragraph A, the agency must use a preferred site unless the cost of the preferred site exceeds the cost for comparable services at a non-preferred site.
Okay. That you've heard Senator Pappas' motion. All in favor of her motion to amend, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevailed, and the amendment is adopted. Further discussion. Senator Roebling?
I do have a question because some of the description on 1.26 and 1.28 could be considered subjective. So in a practical sense, Senator Clark, what would you say? I mean, nobody's going to go around and screen everything, but are you basically asking for an elimination of adult pay-per-view pornography? Is that what you're asking for so that they don't offer that in their selection of movies that are available in hotels? Because I don't know how else you can practically determine what fits this description.
Madam Chair.
Senator Clark.
And Senator Roebling, exactly. I mean, the industry has figured this out. So it's really what's on the pay-per-view. It also, the reference here is what's already in statute. We were trying to make sure that we were not introducing new concepts or anything else. But it also means then that the promotion of those things would not be there, and just that the policies would go along with that. Now, we are continuing to try to figure out if there's another way that we could better describe this. But that's what it boils down to, because they figured out what can be on HBO and what actually has to be on adult pay-per-view. And that's where the line gets changed. So that's really what this bill is looking at. And again, kind of what an individual lodging facility would be determining in its own policies, where we don't want to be determining its other policies. That's up to them. And at this point, we believe we have it pretty close to narrowly focused. There is one other possibility that we may be bringing to the floor if we can kind of figure out one or two other words, but we're working on getting it close, and that's why I said there may need to be some technical changes next year if, when working with the industry, it looks like that we need to do that.
Members, we need to take action on this bill. We have two more, and I want you to have a little bit of time before we take up the Racino bill.
Renew my motion.
Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 2861, as amended, be recommended to pass. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Sharon. Senator Sharon brings us Senate File 2835.
Thank you, Chair Rest. I know that everybody's been sitting long hours, so I will try to move through this clearly and quickly. This bill deals with the financial considerations related to annexation. And it's trying to resolve issues.
At least 5 hours of debate, but you're assuring me that this is a very simple bill, right?
Yeah.
Maybe simple.
We'll get into that. It's trying to improve the process by which cities and townships resolve issues related to property taxes during orderly annexation and during annexation by ordinance. And I'm motivated, although cities and townships have attempted, you should know contextually that cities and townships have attempted to resolve these issues through a legislature-created municipal boundary adjustment task force. And there has not really been much movement. This legislature had hoped that through that process some agreements could come to, and that the legislature would not have to introduce something to resolve the issues between the local jurisdictions.
Senator,
but
Sharon, you could help us if you would just say what the bill does and if there any opposition to it.
And is there any opposition to it?
Yes.
Yes.
What does the bill do?
What the bill does. Let me walk through the bill with you.
Through too much.
In Subdivision 1, the legislation would make changes to Minnesota Statutes 414.036, which requires cities to reimburse townships when property is annexed to the city. In Subdivision 1, the reimbursement would not apply to a contested case proceeding under the Minnesota Statutes. The reimbursement would be made at a town tax rate at the time of annexation, so that's set. The tax rate at the time of annexation and may not equal more than 8 years worth of property taxes. So there's a cap on the number of years worth of property taxes. The municipality would reimburse the town for special assessments for those that are received. The special assessments that come into the city become the obligation of the city. The town must make a written request and include supporting documents within 60 days of the order of annexation for a portion of the debt incurred by the town prior to the annexation and attributable to the property that's going to be annexed. The reimbursement for the debt could be made over but not less than 2 years and no more than 8 years. That's the cap. The reimbursement for special assessments must be paid to the town within 30 days of receipt of the assessment payments by the municipality. Subdivision 2 requires that when a municipality adopts an ordinance under Minnesota statutes, the annexation by ordinance provision, the ordinance must provide a reimbursement from the municipality to the town for the loss of the taxes from the property for a period of up to 5 years under decreasing formula as designated in the statute. And Subdivision 3 provides that the reimbursements under this bill are the only payments for consideration that can be made by a municipality to a township, so that this portion of the bill is particularly important so that we don't ask the city taxpayers to pay more than is established by the rate at the time of annexation.
That's essentially what's in the bill. Is there any opposition to your bill?
I think that there'll be opposition from the townships, and there are elements of the bill that are not completely satisfactory to the cities either, but it is a solution that really protects the taxpayers from an ongoing lack of resolution and dispute and costly hearings. I have, there are people here who would like to testify for and against.
Mr. Sharon, we're supposed to be back in this room at 6 o'clock to take up the Racino.
To take up what?
Racino bill. We were supposed to be done at 5 to allow members time to eat before we did this. I think this is going to be a long discussion on mm-hmm. your bill. I don't know. Let's see.
Carry it over to 6:30.
We'll continue this bill for another 5 minutes.
We'll continue the hearing on the bill.
And then, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, we're going to take up Senate File 2735 at another time. And you would not have, and Mr. Rhodes, if you can't make it, that's okay. It'll probably be on Friday. Sorry. But I can't ask the members to sit here for 6 hours straight.
6 hours.
Just can't do that.
Senator Rest, then can I ask that the 5 minutes be divided between a voice for and a voice against?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
And I didn't read, Mr. Johnson, just a moment. Mr. Johnson, we're, I didn't, do you have other people here to testify?
One from Thief River Falls, unfortunately.
Beg pardon?
One from Thief River Falls.
Well, okay. Please stay. We'll
move it to our
just move we'll it move
after
it.
Our dinner break.
What we'll
after
do, excuse me, Senator Sharon, we'll continue with your bill for 5 minutes. It will be the first bill that we hear before we hear the Racino bill. So it'll be made, we'll take it up at 6 o'clock. Okay?
Madam Chair, can't we still have a little bit of a break?
Yeah, we'll take it up at
6:30 or something.
Well, I don't want to wait that long. We'll come back in at 6:15, okay?
Yeah, but
we have a time-limited debate on the Racino bill, so okay. And this bill, this other bill, will be short. So we'll take that up at 6:15. I'm sorry, I didn't realize there were people here from out of town. Senator Sharon, go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Rest. There is a handout, I think, in front of you that might be able to help also with the, if you read that rather than have testimony. Susan Arntz is from Waconia, is the Waconia City Administrator and will be the first person to testify.
Senator, members of the committee, thank you for the brief opportunity to address you. While I do have lots of examples, I could talk to you about it another time. What I would like to just share with you is that in Waconia, we have had the experience of having the benefit of trying annexation with the lack of clarity that exists in the current statute. The Senate file in front of you adds a significant amount of clarity to annexations that we believe will provide some clarity for the taxpayers on what their responsibilities are between cities and townships. So I would encourage the senators to give it some serious consideration as it does provide that greater level of clarity. I'd be happy to answer any questions. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Arntz. Mr. Sewell?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Kent Sewell with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'm sure it's no surprise that we are in very strong opposition to this bill. This idea of lack of clarity, I don't quite understand, because since 1978, when orderly annexation agreements were first codified as they exist right now, it has always been a matter of free will negotiation between the two parties. If they aren't able to negotiate a clear agreement, maybe you have some lack of clarity. I believe what they're referring to are some changes made in 2006, which was done by mutual agreement after very long, painful hours over in the other body. We reached consensus that there would be reimbursements with safety nets in place to ensure that there would be reimbursements for lost tax base to the township. This bill seeks to remove one of those, and that's in the contested case, and it seeks to greatly restrict the ability for two parties to openly negotiate and find what works for their community. There are a lot of examples of creative solutions that have been mutually agreeable to the city and the township, and that's the key here in these orderly annexations. Both, they are initiated by the city. The township is not the one that gets a voice in this process. These annexations are started by the city. But they sit down on an equal playing field. They can each make an offer. They can each make counteroffers. Just like if you go to buy a car, you wouldn't want a statute telling you that your first offer to the car dealer has to be restricted. That's the way the law has been for 30-some years. It has worked very well. Certainly there are cities that don't like the terms they have reached. There are townships that don't like the terms they have reached. But the bottom line is they are open, mutual negotiations. If the negotiations should break down, the city has other options. The township is always at the mercy of the city. As far as the tax savings, I realize that's probably the domain of a different committee, but very quickly on that, I don't see a tax savings at all. As a matter of fact, I think you'll see a tax increase. There's shift. Most of the payments that go to the township are recaptured by the tax base the city is seeking to annex. Or paid for in other means. Meanwhile, the township loses their tax base completely, which drives up the cost to their taxpayers because there are a lot of fixed governmental expenses that don't go down just because property was annexed in. I could go into a lot more detail, but I know that you are very tight on time, and I will leave it at that we have tried, and we have made some progress towards addressing some pieces, and I think if we keep talking, maybe we will get to an agreement, but it's certainly nowhere close to this bill.
Are there questions or comments for Senator Sharon or Mr. Sewell, Ms. Arntz, Senator Lori?
Chair, I'd like to ask.
Chair, your intention, I certainly hope
we don't intend to push this to a vote after 5 minutes of debate, because this is a very, very, very significant change that, in my humble estimation, tips the scales significantly in the favor of cities. We don't have any township.
We have a motion then, Senator.
I have a motion. We lay this on the table.
Senator Lori moves that Senate file 2835 be laid on the table. It's non-debatable. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The motion prevailed. Sorry, Senator Sherman. The committee is in recess until 6:15.